This podcast is a Majestic Giraffe production. For more information and more content, visit majesticgiraffe.com.
But I was going into Toshi Station to pick up some power converters.
Dragon Con. We hope your hangovers aren't too bad. So we're going to be talking about who was Luke Skywalker, and really I think the underlying question about the discussion that we're going to have is why are so many people on Team Han Solo when Luke Skywalker is really the driving emotional and action force behind the entire Star Wars classic trilogy? I think we're going to discuss why Luke is better than Han, generally. So why don't we start with introductions? It's weird that I'm moderating from the center, but let's start over on the side with Paula, and we'll just go down the line and introduce ourselves.
Okay, I'm Paula Rosenberg. You might have seen me here. I'm on staff with the track, but I got pulled up because I got unofficially dubbed Queen of the Luke Lovers on Twitter. It was a group consensus thing. It was scary. So, yes, that's why I got dragged up here.
I'm Nancy Schwartz. I dubbed Paula Queen of the Luke Lovers. I write for Toshi Station blog and also co-host the podcast.
Hi, I'm Robin Smith. I am here because Nancy and I met through a mutual love of Luke Skywalker. Met through a lot of fan fiction and decided that he is the most awesome. So, yeah.
And for those who missed it, I'm Brian Young. I write for the Star Wars, StarWars.com, Star Wars Insider. I'm the editor-in-chief of a website that covers lots of Star Wars news called Big Shiny Robot, and the co-host of the Full of Sith podcast. And I think Luke's a badass, and I kind of prefer him to Han. I always prefer the Skywalkers.
I'm Sarah Dempster. I am neither a podcast host or write for StarWars.com, but I have been in love with Luke Skywalker since I was 3 years old, so there's that.
I'm Thomas. I'm a captain. I'm a military prosecutor in the U.S. Army. I don't blog for Star Wars, but I blog officially and unofficially for the U.S. Army, although in that capacity, if I wrote about Star Wars, it might be about something a little different. I have to say that although I am a Luke fan, I think he would be a heap of wreckage in the trench were it not for Han, so...
No one's denying Han's contributions. But, yeah, Luke's cool. So, Han Solo seems to me, and I'll start the discussion off and let you guys comment, it seems to me that, yes, in the first movie, Han Solo is a much more major character, and Luke is on his journey, but starting with The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, Luke is really the driving force behind the movies. Without Luke, Han would still be just, a hunk of carbonite in Jabba's palace. He has an emotional journey that I think is much more interesting than Han Solo's entire journey. I think Han Solo went through all of his journey in A New Hope and kind of remained stunted as a scoundrel, especially through Return of the Jedi.
I think that looking at Star Wars as a whole from a very Jungian or Joseph Campbell perspective, Luke is obviously the driving force for change for everyone, not just for himself, but for Han, for Leia, for the galaxy. So he is essentially light. He is the bringer of light to these people. These people would not have had these changes without this force. For me, looking at,
Well, and I think, too, because everyone always makes fun of Luke for the Toshi Station line and being, like, the whiny one, which, A New Hope, he is. But, I mean, who hasn't felt like that? Who hasn't felt like...
Can I point out something really quickly on that? There's no line whinier in the saga than But you could tell Luke? Is that who you could tell?
Also a fact.
I'm sorry. There's nothing whinier than that. I'm sorry. That line needs to get as much attention as the Tosche Station line. So please continue. I'm sorry.
No, but, and so I think people kind of give Luke an unfair rap based on that because, I mean, that's kind of the whole point of his character development journey, that he starts as sort of the naive, kind of whiny teenager who just wants to go out and, like, be the big hero and save the day and, like, just do cool things when, you know, he's stuck on this backwater planet farming moisture. And then Han, of course, you know, comes right on the scene as, like, the cool, like, shooting at Greedo first, second, wherever, however you want to, whichever version you watch. You know, and immediately comes on as, like, really cool, and Luke's just kind of the, like, bumbling along. But, you know, when you watch him progress through the series, and by the end of Return of the Jedi, or actually by the beginning of Return of the Jedi, he just shows up and immediately just, like, force chokes the Jabba's guards. I'm like, holy cow, that's really cool. He's badass now, yes!
Well, I think, Han was a grown man. I mean, Luke is, and I think that's the problem, is everybody calls him the farm boy, which, you know, I'm okay with, because that represents him as, like, the core.
Paula has a thing for farm boys, apparently.
I have a thing for farm boys, I guess. you know, Han's already a grown-up. He's not a very mature grown-up, but he is a grown-up, and Luke, as Brian already said, Luke helps him grow up. But he's also a rogue, which is way more funny. And Luke's journey is way more serious, and I think that's, well, besides the fact that Harrison Ford is a very handsome man, you've got to admit, you know, I think that's where Luke gets the shortchange a lot of times, because I think you tend to miss the straight guy for the guy with all the funny lines.
But I do think, in Han's credit to a certain extent, you don't see the same fleshed out conflict from him throughout the series, but I do. You do consistently see this pull that he has back to his rogue nature. I mean, when Empire Strikes Back kicks off, you know, he's done with setting the sensors. He wants to go back, and he's immediately angry that Chewie doesn't have the Falcon ready to go so that they can get the hell out of there, not continue to help the rebellion, not continue to prep Echo Base for defenses or anything. He's got other stuff to do. And, you know, he at least tacitly references dealings that he's had, you know, on Ord Mandel and whatnot, that are, you know, he's clearly doing things that are in the background, separate from whatever his obligations to the military are. And then, despite the fact that he's a high-ranking officer at that point, he just leaves, or he's ready to leave. You know, you still see that pull on into up to the point, really, where he gets frozen, and then, you know, he's kind of locked in place.
Paula said something I wanted to elaborate on. She mentioned that, you know, Han gets a lot of the funny lines and everything. But one of the things I think gets really overlooked is how funny Luke is. And especially if you just look at Mark Hamill's facial expressions in the background, it's one of my favorite things about the Star Wars trilogy. Especially, like, when they're out of the trash compactor and he just goes, rolls his eyes at Han. Then when they first meet the Ewoks, he's sitting in the background cracking up at Han because he's getting so frustrated. And whenever there's a GIF set on Tumblr of Mark Hamill's facial expressions, I automatically hit reblog because I want everyone to remember that he's funny and not the dour person the EU turned him into. And that's why I loved when Aaron Alston would write Luke, because he remembered that he was funny.
So I want to ask each of the panelists sort of in turn, and we'll start over on this side. What is it about Luke's character that that resonated with you, that made you feel like you connected with him?
I think as a kid, I always go back to this sort of nostalgic reaction that I had when I first watched the trilogy. In A New Hope, Luke didn't quite do it for me along those lines. He bored me a little bit, you know, as you easily can with a 7 or 8 year old. But that all changed in Empire Strikes Back. You know, he goes immediately from getting whapped in the face by a Wampa to, you know, coming right out of the back of the tank, hopping into a snow speeder, and not, you know, not commanding the defense of the base and the retreat from the command center on Echo Base, but from the front to the point where he's, you know, shot down and whatnot. And that level of bravery, like, really spoke to me as a kid. And then I grew too tall to be a pilot myself and was very disappointed. But no, I think that that level of bravery, separate from his larger arc as a Skywalker, separate from his larger arc as a Jedi and whatnot, but just that, that leadership capacity that he had to rally folks, even in some pretty dire times, really spoke to me as a kid, and you know, made me go out and rally my little 7-year-old friends and hit each other with sticks and stuff like that. So.
I think for me, what attracted me at first when as a kid was, I mean, he was the one who got to use the Force and have the lightsaber, which I think was always the coolest part to me. It was like, yeah, like glowing light sword, like who doesn't want that? But then, you know, as I grew older and watched the movies from a more critical point of view, I love his emotional journey throughout the series, where he does transform from this sort of idealistic, naive farm boy to a more world-weary Jedi, but he doesn't lose that idealism to a certain extent. Like he knows that Vader has to be defeated, but he's so intent on trying to save him and trying to find the nonviolent solution. And it's his capacity to love everyone around him, his friends, his father, you know, who, you know, the one of the largest mass murderers in the galaxy, but it's his love that brings him back. And that's really, I think, what draws me to him is just his great capacity to love those around him.
I figure I'll go last.
Okay. I have a lot of the same thoughts about it as Sarah. I thought about it a lot when they asked me to be here because I thought, well, I don't know. Why do I like Luke Skywalker? What is it about him that I think is great? And I thought a lot about it, and I loved him and Mara in the EU together, and I thought really hard, and I came to the decision that I love Luke Skywalker because I, as a person, want to be on that same journey. Not necessarily, you know, mass murdering father, that kind of thing, but the same emotional journey to come from that naivete to be a whole person, to be able to not only love those around me, but to accept who I am and whatever that is, and to be able to have that great capacity to love, but to still make rational decisions. Even though, you're right, Vader had to be defeated, but he didn't have to do it in a way that was detrimental to his soul. Mm-hmm. And to be able to keep his soul intact with all of this other stuff going on is an amazingly strong person. And I think he gets so little credit for that, you know?
For me, it was really easy. It's the first time I saw the binary sunset, and I was 11 years old, and I was not from a moisture farm on Tatooine, but I still wanted there to be something more to the world, and I had all these dreams and aspirations of growing up and what I was going to do, and that was all of my feelings personified in one single shot, and I've just always appreciated, like Sarah and Robin said, how he's so optimistic. It's kind of like the person you aspire to be, and you know, judging just from a female perspective, he's always kind of been my idea for the perfect guy. And all the other girls wanted to date Han, and I was like, no, that's too much baggage. I want to be with Luke.
Okay, everybody stole my answers.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty much, I call myself an old fart fan. I saw it in 77. I was 10 years old, and that binary sunset, yeah, that was it. I really related to that longing for something more, some bigger adventure. And then as the years have gone on, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, you switch over to Han once you get a little older and a little more mature. But I, as much as I adore Han and his silly, snarky ways, it was Luke's ability to persevere that I've always appreciated. You know, and I think we all go through struggles in life, and I can kind of appreciate somebody who can deal with a bad family background with little education, and nobody liked him, and he was bullied. If you saw the deleted scenes at Tashi Station, he gets bullied. He's picked on. He's the awkward kid, and that's what I was at 10, probably still am. And yeah, so that's really what still appeals to me about Luke, is he keeps going on. He keeps plugging.
I think for me, the thing about Luke Skywalker is that I didn't really think about him a lot until after the prequels came out. And the prequels really illuminated everything that made Luke pure. So you go through Anakin's journey and you see that he's made all the same mistakes that Luke did in the classic trilogy. He didn't listen to his teachings. He wanted to go save his mother instead of doing the mission he had in front of him. And Luke does that in Empire, and his friends are more important. But Luke approaches it with such a purity and not with the greed and anger that Anakin does, that it's really, you can see the terror in Yoda and Obi-Wan's faces when they're telling him not to go. You know, that scene in Empire where they're trying to tell him not to go is one of the most powerful, I think, in the whole saga, especially when you take into account everything they know about what happened with the prequels. And then when Luke shows up in Return of the Jedi, every scene he has with Vader, especially the one on the AT-AT, just that moment. I mean, again, like the troubled family background, I had the worst relationship with my father, and I always hoped as a kid that, you know, my dad would take off his mask and, like, he wouldn't be so bad a guy. And Luke's stoic nature in dealing with all of that really, really resonated with me, doubly so after the prequels came out. I don't know where to go from there. So as far as Luke, though, I want to talk about favorite actual moments. And Nancy, you brought up the binary sunset. Aside from the binary sunset, because everybody says that moment is so powerful, and it doesn't matter if you're a fan of Luke or not, just hearing that music queued up and watching him look so optimistically out to the twin suns, it affects you even if your favorite character is Han Solo. So aside from that, what moment of Luke's specifically, in the films or in the books, wherever, was the moment that you would kind of point to as the quintessential Luke Skywalker for you? And we'll start with Paula this time.
Yay, I get to go first. actually, the one that gets me every time is when Vader wants him, or I guess now he's Anakin at this point, wants him to take the mask off. And the emotions that you get from Luke during that scene, and everything that you could just see, everything that he's going through, which is a huge tribute to Mark Hamill, who played Luke. But to me, that's very much Luke, because you see that vulnerable side of him, but also the strength to take the mask off, even though he knows it'll kill him, just as he's getting connected with him again. So that one gets me every time.
Okay, mine's actually from the expanded universe. I'm trying to find the exact quote right now.
Do you want us to skip you
yes,
and come back to you?
Probably.
Okay, we'll do that.
Well, mine is from the expanded universe too.
Don't
we'll probably
mine.
I don't know what it is.
Probably go for it.
They've been through, it's at the very end of the Zahn trilogy.
Okay.
And Luke and Mara have been through this horrible and wonderful journey together, and they're standing up on the top of the building looking out over the city, and he offers her his first lightsaber. It was his father's. It's got a lot of stuff tied up in it, and it's just a gift. It's not for anything. It is because he has faith in her. He respects her. I don't know if at that point he loves her, but in my headcanon he does. But it's this offering of himself with no strings attached, with no ulterior motive, just because he has faith in her and believes in her.
Okay, it's from the book Luke Skywalker and the Shadows of Mendor by Matthew Stover. If you haven't read it, it's a quintessential Luke book, in my opinion. And the quote is between him and Carr Vastor. And Carr Vastor says, "I have known Jedi many, many years ago. That knowing was not a gladness for me. I believed I would never know another, and I rejoiced in that belief. But it is a gladness for me to be proven wrong. I am happy to have known you, Jedi Luke Skywalker. You are more than they were. Luke says, "That's, I mean, thanks, but I barely know anything." Vastor says, "So you believe, but I say to you, you are greater than the Jedi of the former days." And Luke says, "What makes you say that?" "Because unlike the knights of old, Jedi Luke Skywalker, you are not afraid of the dark." And I think that's him exactly.
For me, I think the moment is in Return of the Jedi, after he's reacted so poorly to Vader taunting him with the prospect of his sister turning to the dark side, and he cuts off Vader's hand and looks down at his own gloved mechanical hand, and that realization on Luke's face that that's the path he could take. And again, knowing the journey Anakin took and seeing where this could go and having it echo all the scenes and having them replay in your mind how badly this can go. I mean, this is exactly what Anakin did to Mace Windu. He cut off his hand, and this could be Palpatine finally taking him. And then he turns around and he throws away his lightsaber and he says, "I'm a Jedi like my father before me." And it has that family relationship, and it has all of his strength, and he's never been stronger than that moment.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. That is hands down my favorite Luke moment.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Well, pun intended after the fact. You know, but I mean, and I go on and on and on about this on my Tumblr all the time, but like the fact that he wins by choosing not to fight, and you know, when he says, "I'm a Jedi like my father before me," that is the moment when the good guys win. I mean, you know, you can watch the rest of the movie and it's like right after that scene is when the tide turns in the favor of both the Endor battle and the space battle. But like that right there, that's the moment when they win, and it's because he chooses to trust in what's left of Anakin Skywalker and to trust in, you know, himself. And it's just, I mean, I get chills every time and I might cry every time.
Yeah, I don't want to beat this drum three times, but to back it up, my love of that scene starts before, when it's just pitch black, all you see is Vader's silhouette and the red glow of his lightsaber as he's stalking through the stair, you know, whatever, the undercarriage of the stairwell there, looking for Luke. And Luke has tried to do what he believes in that moment to be the right thing, the Jedi path, which is to hide and not fight. And immediately, as soon as Vader, you know, says those last lines about his sister, you see Luke step away from this infallible hero, that archetype that he's been built up to be at that point, and you see that raw vein of emotion come open at a really, really inopportune time, because he's up to that point stood up to all the things that the Emperor has taunted him with. You know, his friends are dying, the fleet is being destroyed before his very eyes, the Death Star is operational, you know, all of these things, and resist, and he's resisted Vader, and in that moment he brings up his sister, you know, this love attachment that's, you know, very parallel to Anakin's attachment to Padme, and he loses it. And I challenge anyone here to say that if you close your eyes and think of that scene and think of John Williams' score with that chorus going on in the background, if that doesn't give you chills, then you may be an android. I'm not sure. to accelerate and not beat further on that, he is one lightsaber blow away from becoming the Emperor's hand in that moment. And to touch on that facial expression moment, that is hands down my favorite facial expression that Mark Hamill dished out of any of the trilogy, was that moment as he tosses the lightsaber away. And it's pricelessly paired with Ian McDiarmid's reaction as he just stands there silently and says, "So be it, Jedi."
Okay, why don't we take some questions from you guys. Come up to the mic. Come up to the microphone.
Very early on Monday.
Yeah, everybody's going to lose a voice. And
I just want to make a comment, say my favorite Luke moment. You know, in everything you do in life, you make a decision, and at some point you think about, where do I want to go to college? Who am I going to marry? But at some point you have to make that final decision. And I think a real underrated point is when he looks at Obi-Wan, when he's lost everything, and he says, "I want to go to Alderaan, learn the ways of the Force, become a Jedi like my father." It's at that point he really begins his journey. Up until that point, he was a kid. I think that's the point he went from being the whiny kid to the man. At that point, he made the decision what he wanted to do with his life.
Yeah, I like that moment. I definitely like that moment. I was re-listening to the radio drama a couple weeks ago, and that scene came up, and I was like, I had to pull over in my car from that scene. I don't know if you guys have listened to the radio drama lately, but it's good. Anybody else have a comment about that?
No, I think it's, I think right before that is, you know, when he goes to the homestead and sees the really kind of disgusting burnt out hull of it. It's like, and that's when you see it switch. But then he announces it, and that's where you definitively know, wow, he's going on that adventure like he always wanted to. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's we mentioned the Joseph Campbell and all the hero's journey before, but that's, you know, the refusal of the call, and then he
answering the call from there. Yep.
So that's really when it starts.
We've talked about a lot of the parallels that are very obvious and also very subtle between Luke and Anakin. But I think one of the most powerful things for me about Luke's character is actually when he's talking to Vader before they go up to see the Emperor. That's a whole lot of his character is very Padme-like. He's very diplomatic. He's laughing while Han's frustrated with the Ewoks. And he's there talking to Anakin, bringing up family in a very similar way that, you know, Padme asked Anakin to come away, and Luke is asking him to come away. And Leia is much more the snarky, she may be the diplomat, but she's much more Anakin's child than Luke is in many ways in her manner. And I think that it was especially hard for Anakin to resist this because he was so like Padme. And the nonviolence there, again, she was so against the war in general. And then for Luke to throw away his lightsaber, I think that might have been a sort of example, something more to kind of cinch, make that decision for Anakin. I'm sure the nonviolence rang a bell for him in that helmet and possibly contributed to his eventual decision.
But also, look at Padme was more than willing to force the Gungans into service. What Padme did with the Gungans in Phantom Menace is exactly the same thing Luke did with the Ewoks in Return of the Jedi. It's exactly the same thing. And I never put together more the Padme Anakin thing. I'm in.
I was just saying, I got chills. It's like, how can we have loved this movie for 30 years, and somebody has brought up a new way for me to look at it?
There's one, if George Lucas was ever to go back and change something else from the movies, which I don't necessarily condone, but if he did, I would say when Vader says, Obi-Wan once thought as you do, after seeing the prequels, I was like, he should have said it. He should have been your mother, because Obi-Wan didn't really. And Padme was the one who said there's still good in him.
Yeah, I mean, there's the obvious thematic connection right there with Padme on the ship after Mustafar being there is still good in him. And then, you know, Obi-Wan's face years later when Luke says the exact same thing. Like, yeah, Luke is very much Padme's child. And as you said, Leia's definitely Anakin's.
Regarding Luke's choice to go with Obi-Wan and, you know, make his decision, like they were saying, about training to become a Jedi, what's so, I think, meaningful about that is only a couple days ago, he was so set on going to the Academy. And I think people kind of forget that, you know? And so that scene, I mean, obviously, you know, what happened to Owen and Beru must have been, like, you know, changed his mind about the Imperials in general, but I don't know, I just kind of interpreted it as like he was just going along with his friends, like, well, Biggs is going to the Academy, I should go to the Academy. So I think that was really such a huge thing that made him start thinking for himself.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people in very rural areas that grow up with they feel like there's no way out except to do, in many cases, the military. And so if you're looking at it from that perspective, that was the only thing he knew to do. How else do you get out? You're too poor to get off on your own, but the military will pay for you to go, you know, do and see the galaxy. And that's an amazing prospect to a lot of people. But when you start to think critically about what it is that you want, that's a big decision. And that's a big character moment to suddenly go, oh, wait, you're right. That's not what I want to do. That's what my friends are doing. That's what.
Yeah. Plus, at that time, and I guess we'll find out more about this in Rebels, you know, the Empire had pretty much done the whole propaganda thing. So, I mean, I think to him, the Empire is the norm, mm-hmm. and that was his way out.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the point that he just didn't think about it. I very much think that it's status quo in his mind out on Tatooine. That is his option off the planet at that point. That is his way to get out of farming water vapor, is to join this force and go off. And he clearly knows that this rebellion exists because he gets all excited about it. But, you know, it's interesting that you bring that piece up because and I've lost my train of thought completely. Go ahead. You'll come back.
I think what really illuminates that decision completely is if you listen to the audio dramas or watch the deleted scenes with Biggs. Biggs goes to Luke and tells him, "Yes, I'm joining the academy, but I'm going to defect. As soon as we get off port, you know, we're going to jump ship and we're going to go find the rebellion." And Luke can't even begin to comprehend that decision. He's like, "You could be out there searching for the rebellion forever. No one knows where they are." And he says, "Well, we've got a guy who might be able to get us in contact with them. We're going to do our best, but that's the decision we have to make." And Luke was very concerned for Biggs about that. And listening to Mark Hamill do it in the audio drama it's fantastic.
It's like you're listening to deleted scenes. I remember what I was going to say. It brings up a nice parallel to Padme, because she, as she's having a conversation with Anakin, she brings up this piece about, you know, what if the force we're fighting for is actually the wrong side? Anakin immediately gets very defensive and says she's sounding like a separatist or whatnot. But, you know, it takes his own mother that long to really and from a diplomatic side to think about that piece after all the lives that have been laid down in the Clone Wars. For Luke, it's a shame that it had to come to a head in such a tragic way as his homestead is burning. But, you know, otherwise, I don't know. I wonder whether he would have had that moment or if he would have just gone off and, you know, taken the opportunity and gotten out of there and never questioned anything.
Yeah, no, I wonder if he would have jumped ship and joined the Rebellion had he gotten to the Academy and taken the way Biggs did.
I'm not sure he would have.
And
no,
I
don't think he was mature enough, but maybe a couple more years.
I think tragedy, as sad as it is in many cases, is really illuminating. You suddenly go, "Oh, this is what's important to me. This is what matters." And so if you don't have that, particularly in a narrative arc, you don't ever get to that next level of thought about it.
So let's take your question, young sir.
Even though Luke is so awesome, he did at one point go to the dark side, and, like, what do you think made him, because he had built so much, like the Jedi and the New Republic and everything, what caused him to suddenly defect to Palpatine? His dad wasn't.
That was just an urban legend. I think the reasoning in that comic where he turns to the dark side is actually an interesting question. The idea that he needed to know what lured his father, what was so seductive there that caused his father to throw away everything in his life that he did, that he wanted to see what that was. I think that's an interesting question. I'm not necessarily convinced that Luke would have gone down that path.
I think he tempted it.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of that comic series just because I think that moment for him happened in Return of the Jedi.
No, absolutely, absolutely. If you watch the prequel trilogy and see Anakin's fall, and then this is why I'm a huge fan of the watching the movies in the 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, mm-hmm. 6 order. Mm-hmm. After you watch Anakin's fall, and the first time you see Luke in the flesh in Return of the Jedi, he's dressed all in black, which is very dark side, and he's choking Gamorreans, and he's using his Jedi mind tricks to negotiate with people, and he's making death threats. And it seems like he could very much be going to the dark side. And I think that ultimately the entire point of Return of the Jedi is that Luke skated that line the whole time, and when he threw his lightsaber away, that you knew he was never going to turn to the dark side.
And that scene in general is, I think, very poignant, because when you look at the first thing that Luke's priority is to save Han. It's not to the larger rebel cause. It's not to the destruction of Darth Vader. It's to save this block of carbonite and free the guy who's going to then step on a stick later and alert the biker scouts. It's an interesting question, because in my opinion, he puts the entire rebellion on the line by going in there gunslinging, which, I, you know, say what you will about having your lightsaber stashed away in R2, I don't think he had much of a plan when he walked in there beyond just, you know, I'm going to swing my weight around and Jabba's not going to do much to stop me. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's reaching for a blaster pistol, he's dropped into the Rancor pit, and there's just no part of that that you can tell me that he had this grand plan. It just was convenient that R2 was around
but
serving drinks.
I think to your question, though, you're asking how can we think Luke is so great if he's gone to the dark side at any point, right? That's kind of what you're... What makes him what?
What made him go?
No, I think it was him in that particular comic series trying to find out why his dad did.
Yeah, and I think also there's a whole message there about, you know, you see, you guys probably haven't, you're a little younger, but, you know, you see that in cop shows all the time, like the good guy, the guys who go out there with the intention of doing well, and that they will put themselves in dangerous situations with the intention of doing well, but sometimes that can corrupt you. And I think that part of that comic's message was, you know, you gotta be careful how far you're gonna explore these things, because it could taint you. Even an extremely good person like Luke Skywalker can be drawn in, and that's how people lose their way. And I thought that was a really interesting message from that comic.
Yeah, it's a classic, you know, stare into the abyss and the abyss stares back.
Yeah.
Moment.
My mother used to say, "The road to hell is paved with good intentions." And I think that in that arc, and for people in general, sometimes people do things that they regret later, and sometimes you do things that are not good, and you think at the time that, yeah, this is the right decision. And I think I don't love that arc, but in many ways it's a very humanizing thing for Luke to make a bad decision and then have to come back from it, because we all have to do that.
Since I know we're probably not going to get it in episode 7, I want them to produce a 2-man stage play where Anakin and Luke, like Luke and Force Ghost Anakin, actually get to talk and Luke can ask him why. That comic you're talking about came out well before the prequels and well before we knew that how the whole Force Ghost thing worked and how that communication worked. And in that legendary universe, they made it so that those ghosts went away. And there's no indication in the movies that that's actually how it works. And I think that there's every opportunity for Luke to have had a chance to ask his father why, so that particular reason for him going to the dark side would be invalid, because Luke would know why, because he went through the same trials.
There will be a rebellion, yeah. Honestly.
I'm actually really conflicted about that, because while I definitely do not want that to happen, I kind of want them to produce like a 5-minute alternate universe thing, because Mark Hamill being evil is really cool.
This is true. Yeah, for those in the back who didn't hear it, he said, what if Luke goes dark in episode 7? So that's a good point.
Let's take the next question.
All right, I've only seen like the 6 movies. I'm wondering if I want to continue the adventures of Luke Skywalker, what would be a good place to start with that?
Episode
Shadows
7.
Of Mindor.
Episode 7? Okay, everybody give an answer and a reason, okay. All the way down.
We're all on the same page.
Which ones?
Okay, Heir to the Empire. It's the first Timothy Zahn trilogy that restarted things again in the expanded universe. It's a good introduction to, it kind of helps you bridge between episode six and into the now legendary expanded universe. Cool. And it's a good primer. It kind of sets up how the book worlds work. So plus it's just a good, great story.
Yeah. What's it called again?
Heir to the Empire. It's a trilogy, but the first one is Heir to the Empire, and you'll see the other two in the title.
And that characterization of Luke is honestly where I suddenly went, oh, you are way more awesome than I thought you were. So if you like him now, I think that that trilogy will tip you over into the, he's the most awesome.
Yeah, camp. Also, I mentioned it before, Luke Skywalker and the Shadows of Mindor. If you don't want to go ahead and read three books, if you just want to pick up one, it's set 6 months after Return of the Jedi, so you don't really need to know anything about the expanded universe.
Mindor,
M-I-N-D-O-R.
Yeah, it's Mindor.
M-I-N-D-O-R.
Yeah.
That's one of the other moves in the system.
And I would say, personally, I've read all these books and I really love them. But if you're trying to invest in what they're doing going forward, I'd wait 400 days and change and start with episode 7. And there's a new Luke Skywalker book coming out early next year. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anybody in here that doesn't, when they say the legendary expanded universe, does everybody tracking what Disney did to the EU?
Does anybody not know that? Because we'll explain it. Even if there's one of you that has no idea what's coming, you don't know.
Okay.
Okay, you don't know. Okay, so what they did is they made the first three movies, and then they started making books, and then they started making the prequels, and some of the things in the books didn't jive with the prequels, but they kind of just spackled it over, and then they kept making books under the assumption that they weren't going to be making any more movies. And when they made the announcement that they were going to be making more movies, there was a lot of consternation about what was actually going on with the books, because are they going to follow the books in the movies, or are they going to do something else? And ultimately they decided they were going to be doing something else. So they took all of the expanded universe books that have been published to date and said that they're going to be part of a legendary timeline. So it's Ultimate Comics versus Marvel 616, or DC Comics versus DC Earth 2 Comics. And so all of those books that have come out, they've decided are legendary, but they can still draw from them inspiration. So if you watch Clone Wars, you'll see things from the expanded universe make its way into the show. Does that answer your question at all?
Yes.
Okay.
Tomorrow is the first book that's in the new canon.
And it's so good.
Nice.
Cool. No. Yeah.
For now.
Yeah, fan fiction.
not official. Tomorrow, A New Dawn. This is the reader, advanced reader's copy.
Sort of back to that scene at the beginning of Jedi. There's also a lot of theatricality to what he's doing throughout. I mean, there's sort of the ominous robe and everything like that. Is, in addition to sort of playing with the dark side, is there also just a sense that he has never seen what a powerful Jedi is supposed to really look like besides Obi-Wan, but otherwise just sort of, he's out on his own at this point, and the other examples are bad.
Well, I think that there is something to that in-universe, but I think there's actually sort of a dramatic irony for the viewer who's seen the prequels in that costuming.
Well, and also I think from another meta standpoint, it also reflects how he's sort of at the pinnacle of his character development journey. If you notice in A New Hope, his outfit's white, which typically represents purity, innocence, et cetera, which at that point in the story he is. And then Empire Strikes Back, he's wearing the gray fatigues all the time, showing how he's, he's a little more world weary. He's been part of this this war, and he's seen people die, and he realizes that the world is not, as happy and, whatnot as he thought it might be. And then by Return of the Jedi, he's wearing all black, showing he's while still has that idealism and optimism, he has to grapple with the fact that Darth Vader is his father, and he has to worry about, oh, what if I end up like my father? What if I have to go down that path? Or what if I end up going down that path? And it's, I think, a very real fear for him. And so it's from a thematic standpoint, I think that's really more what the black clothes are about, and it's more about showing how he's
how
a
close
lot
to Vader he's getting.
Right, and just well, and just in general, how a lot more world weary he is.
It's a very obvious costuming choice. This is not subtlety in any way. And it gets even better because at the end of Jedi, that flap at the top of his jacket is open with gray underneath. So he's going back the other, he has hit the pinnacle of his journey and is going back the other direction. Which is why in that comic, I never saw him turning to the dark side because he's been there, done that. His journey is back to the light that way.
It shows he was good all along.
Exactly.
Can I make one brief complaint about Luke's character?
No.
At the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back, even the Tauntaun senses the Wampa. Where the hell was Luke on that one?
His brain was frozen.
That's it. That's all I had. That's my only complaint about Luke. If I've only got one complaint about Luke, it's that like he just wasn't paying attention.
Hypothermia.
Yeah.
True.
But no, he wasn't.
White.
He knew something was up because he asks the Tauntaun
like, what's
up.
Girl?
Okay, please.
Okay, it's not a precise question, but
great.
You talked about Luke's relationship with basically everyone else. So Han, Anakin, Padme. You seem to be missing someone. His sister. So...
He has a sister?
He does. He does.
Spoiler alert.
I bury those feelings, but I'd like you guys to talk a little bit about Luke, Leia, and the contrasts between them.
Where to dive in?
Luke and Leia is actually one of my favorite relationships in Star Wars, but we hardly ever get to see it, and that makes me really sad because there are a few moments in Return of the Jedi where they're very brother and sister, but she doesn't know yet. And even at the end, that hug when he comes back, I want to read all about them, like, realizing that they're siblings and, like, kind of catching up on all of the things that they already know about each other, but just...
And how wonderful and difficult that would be. Like,
and
that's not going to be an easy road.
Yeah, but, and one of my biggest disappointments about the expanded universe was that they never really had a lot of Luke and Leia good interactions. I'm really hoping that episode 7 has...
Absolutely. That's the thing I'm absolutely the most excited about. With Lawrence Kasdan writing the screenplay, have any of you guys read The Making of Return of the Jedi, like the giant coffee mm-hmm. table book that Rinsler wrote? Mm-hmm. The way Lawrence Kasdan worked with George Lucas and Richard Marquand on writing Return of the Jedi was they just went back and screened A New Hope and Empire over and over and over again and just kept having conversations about what would logically happen next. And I really like what Lawrence Kasdan thinks about what would logically happen next. And I think in Return of the Jedi, Luke is given a very specific commitment to train Leia, and he promises her in that last scene on Endor with her that he's going to do that. And I hope episode 7 gives us that, and I hope they give us a Jedi Leia that we can all love and adore.
And I hope they remember the family theme that runs through all of these. I hope they don't just toss that out and run amok, because part of what's so wonderful about it is this larger family piece, loyalty, family, love, whether they're blood relatives or not. They're creating this family, and I really hope that that's not lost somewhere.
Well, and I think what I love the most is going back to the scene in Return of the Jedi when Luke finally snaps and, you know, just starts wailing on Vader in the Emperor's throne room, is, you know, you think about everything Luke's been through for the most part at the hands of Vader up until that point, you know, having his only home burned down, the only family he ever knew brutally murdered, you know, Obi-Wan murdered right in front of him, Vader taunting him about it, you know, the whole Empire Strikes Back lightsaber fight and, you know, everything, but he's kept his composure up until that point. You know, it's been hard, but he still remembers, you know, he has to keep his emotions in check and he has to, you know, not let them rule him. But the minute that Vader starts threatening to turn Leia over the dark side, he snaps and he that is the one thing he cannot take is seeing her corrupted, and, you know, because he thinks he can do it. Like, he's very much the noble hero, and he can take on all the pains of the world and, you know, be stoic through it. But as soon as you try and hurt, you know, his sister and literally the only family he has, then like he's not going to stand for it, and that is what causes him to almost go down the dark side, the same way that fear of losing Padme is what caused Anakin.
Well, I think an important theme there that undergirds it is Leia is his rock, much the same as Padme was Anakin's rock, to the point where he finally turned. I think you see this as a consistent theme throughout A New Hope and Return or Empire Strikes Back. Outside of this sort of like high schoolish attraction that he has before he realizes what's really going on. But you know, Obi-Wan is struck down. Who is there putting a blanket on his shoulders but Leia? He is fresh out of the Bacta tank. Who is there to greet him and comfort him but Leia?
And kiss him.
And give him a kiss. That's his second favorite Luke face, is him just like kicking back like, take it easy, huh? And you know, his hand gets cut off and he gets his tail kicked by Vader.
And she kisses him again.
On Cloud City, and there she is again. And that's who he reaches out to for the first time, force-wise, to make that connection to. And so, I think when you think about it in that sense, because when you look at Anakin's character, who does he really open up to? He doesn't get that sort of emotional support, certainly not from the Council, certainly not from Obi-Wan in most aspects. He's really emotionally opening up to Padme in most instances, and when that's threatened to be taken away, aside from the fact that she's pregnant with his children, that drives him crazy. And the same thing when Vader threatens to take that from Luke, take that emotional support, it drives him nearly to the point of turning to the dark side. It's a powerful moment.
Next question.
This is actually more of a comment, but it's exactly what I wanted to comment on. The theme of family in the Star Wars universe, and one of my favorite Luke moments is the second to last shot of Return of the Jedi when he's watching the spirits of his father, Obi-Wan, and Yoda, and he's content about it, and then Leia pulls him back, and he's able to go back to his found family. And you know he's not going to let this very traumatic thing haunt him. He's able to get past it because I think a lot of hero stories are sort of stuck on the hero alone. He has the biggest burden to bear, and he can't necessarily share it with anyone. And I just really like the fact that Star Wars Luke is able to have that family, because it's something that Anakin was not allowed to have. This is a little bit of a soapbox I have on why the Jedi Council sucks, why they are the worst.
Well, their answers were correct, but they just... I think that was what the Yoda had it exactly right. The exact right answer is that the ultimate end goal, this is what all of philosophy teaches, is the ultimate end goal of life is death. That's what we have looking forward to everyone, and that you can't get damaged or become damaged by losing people, because death happens, period. And that's the right answer, but that's not the answer someone who's, pre-grieving for someone wants to hear. And Palpatine told him the wrong answer, but in a way he wanted to hear it. And Luke, a lot of people seem to complain. Well, not a lot of people. There was a very narrow generational band of people who thought it was cheesy that Luke and Leia were actually brother and sister. And I think that relationship was so important and comforting, because these are the two people that paid the highest price for the rebellion. Luke lost the only family he ever... He lost his adoptive family. He lost his only mentor. He lost his friends. He lost Biggs. Biggs was his only connection left with Tatooine, and he lost him. And Biggs died protecting him. And Leia loses her adoptive family, her planet. She's lost friends. And they're both alone in the universe. And they come to the realization that not only are they not alone in the universe, that they are the only... they are biologically linked as family, strengthening their link together, and they're the only two people I think that can come. So them becoming siblings was so comforting to me, that they can both help get through that stuff together more so than they could even as just friends.
Right, and to continue that on even a larger scale, not only have they lost their families, Luke is truly the only one in the, that's a lonely place to be, the only Jedi, but then come to find that Leia has the same thing. So they're on a larger spiritual, metaphysical journey together, rather than just a familial journey, which I think is also a very central theme, that spiritual Eastern philosophy.
I can't wait for episode 7. Yeah,
your shirt is awesome, by the way.
Panel. Yeah. One of the things I love is that Leia, you mentioned the moment where Leia brings him back and he's, you know, the last shot of Return of the Jedi is him with everyone. And it would be so easy for him to kind of be the lone wolf and all that, but I very much want to see him in episode 7 either leading whatever the new Jedi Council is or continuing to teach Jedi, like Yoda with the younglings. Like, I would die if I saw Luke Skywalker teaching a bunch of little tiny Jedi how to use lightsabers.
How many ovaries would explode?
A thousand. But because he's not like, you know, Anakin. Anakin was very insular except for those few people. But Luke is, I think he's an extrovert. He's got a lot of friends. You know, he's able to make those connections very well because of that. And Leia is, you know, the first person he kind of gloms onto.
And that's a lot about the fear thing that they keep going back to, is you don't have friends because you're afraid of losing them. You know, like, Vader doesn't have them because he doesn't want to lose them. He doesn't want to give up that part of himself. And Luke is so open about that giving of himself and that receiving of friendship and family. And I think it's just so awesome.
Which is funny, because with his best friend, the first thing he says to him is, listen, we don't have to sit here and listen to this.
and he
tries to leave.
You can be afraid. You can learn to let go of all you fear to lose. Isn't that like the line from Yoda? Yeah. So you can not be okay with losing people, but still have people in your life.
Right.
So first, a sidebar comment. Someone up there had mentioned that the beginning of Return of the Jedi, that Luke kind of puts the rebellion on hold or on the line to go visit Han. That wasn't Luke's expedition. That was Leia's expedition. You know, Luke was the plan B in case Leia's rescue didn't work. So if you're going to blame somebody for that little side trip, it should probably be Leia, not Luke. And then to bring things back around to the very beginning, I think my favorite Luke Skywalker moment was at the end of New Hope, or near the end of New Hope, the attack on the Death Star, when he turns off the targeting computer and for the first time just, lets the Force take him over. You know, he's using the Force, but he's letting the Force use him. And that's when he really becomes a Jedi, even though he doesn't have any training, is, when he opens up and, you know, lets himself be a conduit for the Force. Yeah.
No, those are all very powerful. I would argue, though, that I think that was Luke's expedition. When they're on the skiff and Luke turns to Han, and Han's trying to figure out what's going on, and Luke's like, don't worry, I've taken care of everything. You know, and he's the one who's placed Lando there.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably more of a joint expedition between the two of them, like, let's be real. But
I think they had contingency
plans. Yeah.
I think he knew Leia's plan wasn't going to work. That's a terrible plan. And that's, I mean, R2 was in there first, and R2 had his lightsaber. So I think he knew. He everything proceeded as he had foreseen.